Welcome, everyone, to the December 5th Podomatic podcast of the A Word. I am your host, Glenn Watson, also known on YouTube as All Babies Are Atheists.
And I am your other host, Kate Farr, also known as Bionic Dance on YouTube. Welcome.
How are we today?
Well, you know, it has definitely been a day. Of all the days I've ever had, today is without a doubt the most recent. Things have been kind of interesting lately in the atheism world, at least on YouTube. I don't know about the rest of the place. Yeah, there's been a lot of arguments, a lot of just discussion back and forth, more than a little bit of snark. How about yourself?
Oh, as you know, the same. Definitely, I've had my share of trolls, people who, for anyone who doesn't know what a troll is, and I think you've all come into them at one point or another, but it's somebody who likes to try to create drama where there isn't any, to create trouble and general mayhem.
Back to your bridge, filthy troll.
Yes, 1995 is gone. You can go away now. It is done. Be gone, evil, vile things. And so, well, when you have a name like All Babies Are Atheists, you get more than your share of people who just for the name alone see you as a very large target.
It's true. When I chose my name, it was actually for my animation. But when you chose your name, it was clearly for the issues. I've gotten fewer of the trolls. I think I've gotten a little less of the negative attention just on that basis alone.
But definitely there is an initial, how dare you say all babies are atheists. And definitely, you've made a video recently, for anyone who wants to look at it, it's of course under YouTube /users/bionicdance, on the topic of all babies are atheists. And I definitely should do one myself. I have spoken on it on many of the blog TVs that we do, and on many of my videos, but not as a specific topic, and probably needs to be done, and bound to get more than a few views.
Well, the question I have to keep asking people is just how many gods do you think how many gods do you think babies believe in? If you're not a theist, then you're an atheist. So if babies don't believe in any gods, clearly they have to be atheists. And one of the things I keep hearing is, well, babies like to look upon their mothers as gods. They provide food and shelter and protection. I'm like, no, that doesn't count. That's prevarication. A god is a deity, an actual magical being. Your perception of something does not make it a god.
No. And what they're looking to their parents for is their entire universe. That's a totally different thing. They say that this person up here is my world. They're not worshiping them. They don't believe that they magically make things appear. They don't have that kind of conceptual ability. All they see is, you are my world, feed me, change my diaper, make me feel good. That's it. And there's a big difference. And I get a lot of people, and I know you do, say that, well, then you could easily say a rock is an atheist or a toaster is an atheist, that you have to have conscious thought and deny the God. And that, of course, is not true.
But I mean, even if we were to accept the notion that rocks can't be atheists, that a car can't be an atheist, if we narrowed it down just to thinking, feeling beings, they'll say, well, could a dog be an atheist? Could a cat be an atheist? And I'm sitting here thinking, yeah, how many gods do you think they believe in? But even if we were to still narrow it down just to humans, and I were to ask, well, how many gods does a baby believe in? If someone was stranded on a desert island from the age of a child, they'd never been told that a god existed, and they didn't believe in any, that person is an atheist because they don't believe in gods. But they want it very badly to be, no, an atheist is someone who denies a god's existence. They'll even go so far as to invent new words like non-theist, someone who's never taken a position. And it's like, seriously, that doesn't really cover it. I mean, atheist without theism, not a believer in God. It's that simple. Yep. And if they really want to narrow it down to the people who have explicitly denied God, well, there's such a thing as hard atheism and soft atheism. There's positive atheism and negative atheism. These are subcategories of atheism. If you want to debate that, we're happy to. But you can't narrow down to just one of those categories and say only this is atheism. That's just not right.
Yeah. And if I just pulled up the very first one on Google, the freedictionary.com, which is pretty much a good de facto standard. They have no difference really from, say, the Merriam-Webster or any of the others. And the atheist is a noun, one who disbelieves or denies the existence of God or gods. They used to have two definitions, and this was back when Christians wrote the dictionary with a definite Christian bend and trying to influence people to change the meaning of the word. It simply means one who either disbelieves or denies the existence. You can be either. You can be both.
Well, it's true. And if you look at other dictionaries, I believe it's the World English Dictionary, they have a definition that actually says one who does not believe in a God. That it doesn't have to be denial. And yeah, that's the definition that most of the atheists these days, self-declared atheists, go for. That's the one that we support. And in my never humble opinion, I think that the people who are calling themselves a thing get to define that thing. If there's a dispute, you kind of want to defer to the people who are saying, this is what I am. Because otherwise you're setting up a straw man argument. You're saying, you know, no, the word means this. You're calling yourself that, so that's what you have to defend, like it or not, whether that's what you are or not. I've actually encountered theists who say this kind of shit.
Yeah, and the idea, we've had a little bit of dealing with somebody who believes that it's not the etymology or the breakdown of the parts of the word, but the general usage of the word that makes it work. And that's, of course, simply not true, especially when it comes to the Greek and Latin breakdown of it. It's very important to be able to break it down into the etymology. That's why medical words are usually used with Latin and Greek. And that's why terms for, say, archaeology and other sciences, because you can break them down and say, this part means this word, this part means that word. And a or an at the beginning or to the left of a word means not. It negates the word to the right, word or words. So
exactly,
an atheist,
exactly,
is very simple. And when people try to complicate it, they have an agenda.
Yes, they do. And a number of them have actually tried to deny having an agenda. But then when they explain their reasons for having this definition rather than the one I've explained, they have an agenda pretty clearly. A lot of them have just said, well, you need to have something to argue for, too. You also need to have the burden of proof. It can't just be me. I've actually heard them say this. But the truth is, they are the one making an assertion. They are saying God does exist. And if they can't back that up, then their assertion fails.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that for their assertion to fail, for their position to be wrong, we have to prove ours is right. It doesn't work like that. That's not how the burden of proof goes.
Yeah, the burden of proof is not on the person who says there isn't something. It's on the person who says there is. And you can even take this into the mathematics of, say, zero. There is zero oranges on this table. Now, that does not mean there was ever oranges on that table. A null point, something where there is nothing, does not have to argue there was something. All it simply means is there's nothing there. It's the same thing with atheists. It means there is no God there. It doesn't mean there was one there before or there wasn't. All it counts is that I don't believe in a God at this particular point. It does not define anything beyond that point.
Well, and that comes really close to defining my position, which, honestly, I hope it's not as unique as it looks, but from my interactions, I may kind of be, if not in a completely separate category, at least in one that not everybody holds. I am completely open to the idea of a God existing. Completely open. I'm just not open to an unproved God. I'm not open to faith. If you can actually show me that a God does exist, I will go, okay, a God exists. You just have to be able to prove it to me. With that in mind, the theist does have the burden of proof. If they say there is a God, I'm not against that. I'm not saying, well, it would be horrible if it was true, or I'm not saying I want you to be wrong. I'm saying prove it to me. Show me that this is true. Don't tell me to just believe it through faith. I can't do that. I need to be shown that a God exists. And that should not be something that's impossible for religion. In fact, it's what makes me most suspicious of religion is the requirement that we have faith rather than being given proof. God is this spectacular being that supposedly can do absolutely anything, and yet we never get to see it. We never get to see these miracles. We never get to know. We only get to know after we're dead and can't come back and tell anybody. Why should I believe any of this? Seriously.
Absolutely. Oh, totally. And it's a matter of, as I said before, muddying the water. It's adding things. It's clouding up the entire issue when it doesn't need to be. And I think any good skeptic, any person who thinks, should be remaining what you are, is an agnostic atheist. Someone who says there's not enough information, agnostos, no information, no knowledge involved. And there isn't. You can't possibly see every part of the universe simultaneously, so there's no way to say that there is with absolute certainty there is no God. For me, I say there is no God because I feel that there's enough data in here that, at least for all of the ones that have been defined for me from mythology and from present day, that I don't believe there is one.
Well, that's where we get into yet another definitional issue, because the definition of agnostic means different things to different people. I mean, that word to me means, like you just describe it, agnostic, without knowledge. But apparently an agnostic with regard to religion, to a lot of people, means someone who thinks that the concept of God is unknowable, that God's existence cannot be quantified, cannot be known by humanity at all. And I'm sitting there thinking, well, that's certainly a position you can hold, but it's not what the word agnostic describes. Not really. But when I describe myself as an agnostic atheist, I'm saying I'm an atheist because I don't know. Make me know, fill me with knowledge, and I may become a theist. Doesn't mean I'll give God my allegiance, but at least he'll have my belief.
Yeah, that is another way of them muddying the waters. They're taking a word that has a clear information within the word that tells you it's not a complicated word or an archaic word, agnostic. It just means that there is no knowledge, no information. There isn't. They've never given us information. There was a group that the group that actually buried the text that we found with that go after the Dead Sea Scrolls, the more full version of what should have been in the New Testament when Constantine took the documents and decided what made the Bible and what didn't. And they're at Hagna Mati in Egypt. They were buried under the desert because it was dangerous to have them. And there were people called the Gnostics, and they were the ones who believed that there was physical knowledge of knowing of God. Now, there was other people who didn't like them because they said that faith was more important, that you shouldn't know God physically, that you should just trust. That the whole act of saying, I am ignorant and that is good, is better than saying, I've seen evidence, I know God exists as a physical form.
The problem with that, of course, is that con men say exactly the same thing. They say, no, don't check. Don't check to make sure I'm the actual owner of the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't check that this car actually works. Just trust me and buy it.
Yeah.
You know? And we would make sure, if we're not, you know, completely gullible, we would make sure that, yes, we really are buying the Brooklyn Bridge, that, yes, this car is actually worth the price I'm paying for it. We would check and make sure then. Why is God this big exception? Why shouldn't we check and make sure that God is real?
What?
Why?
Most con men are like that. They try to play on people's wanting to believe in somebody else with decency and faith. They say, why don't you trust me? That makes me feel bad that you don't trust that I am doing something right for you. Don't you think I'm a nice person? And that's what God's saying. He says, isn't just believing in me enough for you? Don't you just want to believe? Isn't that going to be enough? And people do want to believe in something. Unfortunately, putting your money on God, it's a lame horse. He's not going to end up on
cross
the finish line.
I want to know why belief is so important to God, apparently. Faith is so important. There are religious traditions out there. Some of them actually say, you know, well, if you're a good person, God doesn't care whether you believe or not. But there are some that say belief is even more important than being good. Belief without proof, faith, is so much more important. It's more relevant to you getting into heaven rather than going to hell, kind of thing. Don't get me started on heaven and hell and their reality. But the point is that faith is apparently this thing that God needs so very badly. No one ever has even attempted to explain why.
No
one has ever said to me, God needs faith because. It's never come up.
No, and it goes like the ever-present John 3:16 at every freaking American sport there's always some idiot in the audience holding up John 3:16 on a placard, and it says, "Whosoever believeth in me shall not perish, but shall have everlasting life." The idea is that the belief alone is enough to save your ass. That you don't have to do nice things. As a matter of fact, do it like, you know, there's, well, the Bible's contradictory, just like everything else. Is some say acts alone are useless, that you will go to hell no matter how nice of a person or good you are to other people. And other ones say faith alone won't do it. But most of them say you've got to have faith. That there's, of course, the part in the Bible where Jesus comes down and shows everybody the wounds and everything, and, of course, the proof. That's where the Gnostics came from. They said, look, you know, he came down and he showed evidence. But there are other parts of the Bible that contradict that and say, you should never have needed that proof. You should have just blindly walked with us and been the sucker. And it's very contradictory. Even they can't decide on it from church to church.
And I'm trying to figure out exactly why I should not call that ignorance. Why it's faith instead of ignorance, or it's faith but it's not ignorance. How is that even true? You're basically saying, I don't want to know. I should not know. Well, doesn't that mean that you're being willfully ignorant? And no one likes to be ignorant. I consider ignorant deliberate stupidity. I mean, that's what ignorance is. If that is what your church wants of you, if that's what your God wants of you, question their motives. Seriously, what are they protecting by having you know less?
Well,
be suspicious.
Here's a great place to use a dictionary again. Ignorance is a noun, lack of knowledge, information, or education. Now, they consider this actually a selling point to their. They just call it blind faith. But blind faith is ignorance. It's an intentional lack of knowledge. And matter of fact, when you try to give them knowledge, they say that it's devil-inspired. They won't even listen to it. We say, look, I have proof to sway you away from your faith. They said, nope, you're tempting me. No, I'm actually informing you, but whatever you want to call it, it's your call. What I love in this particular dictionary, in the free dictionary, it says, see also stupidity. I love that. Ignorance, see also stupidity, because to blindly go ahead, especially when you have information to the contrary of something that you believe in, is stupidity. And we have seen people who have said that they have changed from a Christian to an agnostic, someone who is willing to wait for evidence. We've seen one of the people on YouTube is the Woods of Jordan.
Don't get me started on that.
But
guy.
As an example, he's one that's an easy example right now. There's a lot of people who say that they've turned away from the Christianity because there's not enough proof. And within a few days of feeling that emptiness, that they don't have that ignorance filling in, kind of padding in, saying, you know what, ignorance is good in religion. So later on, we know not much. I mean, you and I both know that as atheists, the jury is out on a lot of stuff. Where was the matter in the universe coming from? We don't know. Where did the Big Bang start? Was there a big crunch? Is there going to be everything slipping back down to a singularity? We don't know everything. But the ignorance, we're willing to leave that empty hole and not fill it full of something, this bullshit.
Right? We don't actually need a placeholder to say, well, until we figure out what actually happened, we're going to put this in that gap. We don't need that. What we need is the ability to think critically and skeptically and to say, look, until we know, we shouldn't guess.
Yeah.
Or at least we shouldn't assert that we do know when we don't. Unfortunately, a lot of religious people don't follow that rule at all, that not knowing for them is actually a good thing.
Yeah.
And it absolutely boggles my mind. In fact, I've gone so far as to invent a new word to talk about it. Mind you, I did find one reference to this word online before. Apparently on a 2007 web board, someone suggested exactly the same word, but apparently it didn't catch on. I'm trying to spread it around. I know I made it up before I heard about the 2007 web board, but anyway, the word is epistivist. It comes from the Greek word pisti, or pistevo is the verb form, which is having faith, to have faith. And then you modify pistevo with a to negate it, not having faith. And then one who does not have faith is an epistivist. You have epistevo, epistivist. So I am an agnostic, epistivist, atheist. I am one who is waiting for knowledge, one who thinks skeptically and critically and does not believe in a God. That's how you would designate me. AAA, some people have called it. The response to this word, has, on YouTube at least, has so far been very positive. I'd say overwhelmingly so. A number of people have really, really liked it. There's even been a Facebook interest group started for it. If you are one who, like me, rejects the notion of faith as a way to know anything at all, declare yourself an apistivist.
So, Kate, you'll have to give me the link to that interest group, and I'll include it in the description for this Podomatic broadcast.
Absolutely.
That way people can at least check for yourself. And it is something, and you know what a lot of people, a lot of Christians are going to be saying is that, well, you know, if God ever does come down and prove himself, that your lack of faith, you're going to get punished for. And I think that that is another one of their nice little scare tactics. It's saying, you know, if you don't believe now, later on, he's going to make you really sorry that you didn't.
Yeah, that is one of the ways they try to hook you, is the fear factor. They like to say, well, if you don't do what we say God wants you to do, then you're going to be punished for it later. It will be bad for you. And let's face it, if someone is trying to scare you into doing something, you really ought to check and make sure that there is something to be afraid of, even the more because of it. Because if they're playing to your emotions, it may be that they're trying to override your intellect, that they're trying to pull a fast one on you by making you scared rather than letting you think.
Absolutely. And it is a common way that shysters do these kind of things. And I do consider that the people who hawk the religion on people are definitely shysters. They must in some way know that what they're doing is deception. Especially these people who say that they have a degree in philosophy, they've read all of the Bible. If you've read all of the Bible, that should be more than enough to turn anybody away from it. Unless you have a willing stupidity. You've actually got your own ignorance. You know that what you're saying is wrong, and yet you still go forward.
Well, the first name that comes to mind on all of that has got to be William Lane Craig. We could do a whole episode on that idiot.
Oh, certainly. And, you know, if you go on the televangelist, you've got the Peter Popoff, who did not trust that God was going to give him his messages and got his wife to give it to him within a concealed little earphone inside of his ear. And I've spoken about it on podcast number one. The fact is that obviously he didn't have a lot of faith.
Clearly not.
He didn't wait for the sign to come. No, he had everyone fill out a form at the door, and then his wife, of course, just read them out. Now, I mean, my proof would have been I would have gotten into the audience carrying a crutch and put down that, you know, I've got a 13-pound prostate or something. I would have written down something that's absolutely ludicrous, could not be, and then have him tell me what it is. That would have been my proof. I know the Amazing Randy took his wind out several times, and yet people still stupidly follow him forward with, of course, what? Blind faith.
Well, and don't even get me started on that Uri Geller guy, too. Oh.
You know, we definitely need to do one. Something that I was telling Kate is we are on Podomatic. I've placed us under religion-other, which includes a lot. The paranormal are beating us out, folks. The paranormal cafe. There are groups that listen to these radio programs about werewolves and UFOs and some of the most ridiculous things. Again, they say that there is a conspiracy keeping the truth away from you, that you should just blindly believe what they say without seeing the evidence, that they say, instead of rather saying that it's somewhere in some sort of heavenly plane, they say that the government, the men in black, are hiding these things from you, but they somehow are surviving and keeping the information alive.
Yeah, they're not out to save your soul. They're just out to save you from the government that apparently wants to control everything. I mean, they actually use the term like the Illuminati and mean it.
Yeah, the men in black, the Freemasons, the alien overlords. And, of course, they're trying, of course, to keep you safe until we blow up in 2012. If it's something inevitable, you would think if they knew it that they'd all be jumping off of a roof somewhere. But, of course, they're raking in the money. Any of these groups, they have PayPal and other types of places. If you see them on YouTube, you'll see that they're asking for donations to keep their YouTube channel alive, their free YouTube channel. There's lots of little pointers out there. People, keep your mind open, but not so open as that it falls out.
And actually, though, just as an aside, and you know this already, Glenn, but let's tell our listeners, the world actually is going to at least begin to end in 2012. Because, you see, I am going to finally, in a couple of days, actually, December 15th, I am going to finally qualify to run for president of the United States, because December 15th is my 35th birthday. That's the last requirement I have to meet. And when I'm elected, I will destroy you all. Just saying.
Well, if it isn't
you, it's... 2012, yes, the world will indeed end. It'll probably start when I declare war on Norway, just because.
Well, the good thing, if it was you over Hillary Clinton, either one of you would destroy the world. So, I mean, you know, it's your people's choice. You want Hillary Clinton to blow up the planet, or do you want Kate? Kate will at least add a little flair to it and maybe have a Roxette soundtrack behind the destruction of the world. Hillary Clinton, who knows what she would have?
So, it will be entertaining, folks. You know, be sure to vote for me this time. Why the lesser of two evils? Anyway, back to the topic at hand.
FAR 2012, yeah, no pantsuits.
You know, these people, they do like to scam you. They do like to use, they play on your fears, all of that stuff.
Totally. Absolutely. And so, and I think that Epistemus definitely works. Where this other fellow, I don't know much about him, only from what you've told me, but where he failed, you may actually succeed in getting this to be something that people will use. And it does fit. I think that a lot of people would love to know something about, something bigger than we are, something that fits into what you would call the supernatural, or, you know, it's still part of nature, so that's kind of a misnomer, but for something that allows us to think there's something bigger than ourselves controlling the universe. Needing faith for that, well, that's just not enough from a lot of people.
It's true, and I wish more and more people would stand up and say, yes, I don't believe this garbage either. That if it's true, there ought to be some proof of it. And I want to see that proof. If that's you and you're sitting in the closet, or you don't realize it, or you don't realize how much of a problem it is, which would shock me, because look around the world and see how much religion has made problems for us all, like in the Middle East, for example, or, you know, with gay marriage or gays in the military or any of that kind of stuff. If that is something that hasn't occurred to you, it really ought to have. If you are someone who does not believe in faith any more than we do, stand up, be recognized, make your voice heard. It's very important. It could, in fact, save us all. I don't want to scare people. I don't want to sound like there's some conspiracy, but seriously, it is very, very important. I mean, even just imagine how many great scientists we've probably lost to faith. Think of how many people have been raised by families that said, you have to believe in this without any proof whatsoever, and this is what God is, and this is what our religion is. As a result, they never did think critically. But had they done so, they could have been amazing inventors, scientists, thinkers, politicians, whatever. You never know. That's something that I think we all need to think about. This is one of the reasons why I find it very difficult to stand by and just let people raise their children to be non-critical religious thinkers without at least putting my voice out there. I'm not going to go so far as some people is and say it's child abuse, but man, in some ways it almost seems that way. Just
child
but,
neglect,
like, intellectual abuse.
Neglect, perhaps?
Perhaps.
Abuse is in all different levels. I think not giving your child the best potential for their world is a form of neglect and perhaps even abuse. You can think of what would happen if, say, a Jimmy Swaggart son had wanted to become a physicist or a scientist, archaeologist even. Oh my goodness. Starting from the garbage that was shoveled into their brain at an early age and then carrying on that they are the child of an evangelist, there's no way they could do anything without having the reputation destroyed and, of course, their brain altered at a very young age. Or Peter Popoff, if he had children. Oral Roberts, his son became an evangelist and a scam artist, by the way.
I know that there are members of the Westboro Baptist Church, the Fred Phelps clan, that have broken free of the religion and made lives for themselves in the outside world. And to them, I applaud. Yeah. I am very pleased that they've managed to break free of that crap.
Must be hard.
And as I understand, I actually saw a documentary about Amish children that are, I forget what age it is, I think it's like 15, 16, 17, 18, somewhere in their teen years. They are actually allowed to go out into the what I would call the civilized world,
yes,
the technological world, the more advanced modern world outside of their Amish roots, and see if that's for them. They're actually given the opportunity to break free. And for that, I applaud them, that they are given that opportunity. The only thing that I don't care for is that if these Amish children come back and say, I don't like the outside world, I want to stay Amish. And then after they've done that, they say, you know, I was wrong, I want to go back to the outside world, then they're excommunicated. Then they're basically shunned. They're told, no, I'm sorry, you can never come back, you are not one of us. But if they go and they say, yeah, I want to be part of the modern world, without ever saying they want to come back, then they're actually still embraced. They're still kept close somehow. They're like, they're still considered family. I don't really understand what the reasoning is. The documentary didn't go into it, but it's a very interesting sort of way that they handle that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's called Rumspringa. So Rumspringa, and it's a rite of passage. They believe that they have to challenge their faith by going out into the world of heathens and decide if they want to be part of the world. It's what do they call it? Man or mammon. It's basically they decide, do they want to be the world of material goods or the world of God? And the thing is that even if they are, they do decide during Rumspringa to leave, they are discouraged. Their family is discouraged from speaking with them. It's not shunned, but they definitely are not going to get a lot of contact. But many of them have left to become doctors and come back and be physicians in the local area to help their people to a certain extent. It's still, but you can see how religion has damaged them, that they would feel a great amount of guilt and remorse if they leave, because they would be leaving their entire family. They would not be able to have children with anyone there. They would not be able to see someone that they fell in love with. These people would be intermarrying amongst themselves. And that is one of the reasons they're becoming a shrinking population. It's very hard to keep people ignorant like that when there's so much information in the world. Getting out even for 6 months during Rumspringa is more than enough for them to open their eyes, for a lot of them in many cases.
Well, and honestly, I don't see how anybody could do that to their child. Could say, I shun you forever, you're not any part of me. I mean, a child of mine would have to, like, cut off a limb before I'd say, okay, that's it, I'm done with you. You know, and I am, by a limb, I mean one of mine. It's like they would have to commit severe acts of violence upon me to the point where I am crippled before I'll ever say to a child, no, I want nothing more to do with you. These people are doing it based on their imaginary friends that they can't prove exist.
Yeah.
Even if God does exist, why would you want to follow a God that expects this of you? To do that to your own child? I can't even picture it. I can't even imagine. I can't empathize with that at all. And if anybody else can, A, I want you to explain how, but B, why? I don't get it. It doesn't. I'm sorry, I can't do it. I can't even understand it. I really can't. I can't empathize. I can't relate.
Well, look at how it used to be with parents believing in the punishment of a child. They would actually beat the child and say, it hurts me more than it hurts you, which is bull. Definitely does not hurt you. You may feel a little remorse or guilt, but this child is traumatized for life from what you do. As you know, I'm a big advocate for no spanking. Like, I don't believe there's a place for it. I don't believe there's ever a reason to physically damage a child for, say, spilling the milk or even talking back to your parents. There are other ways. It takes work. It takes effort on a person's part. And that's what people don't want. As I've mentioned to you just earlier, is that people don't want to work anymore. Nobody does. Everyone wants things to come easy. They want their 15 minutes of fame, they want millions of dollars, and they don't ever want to put any effort into their life. And, of course, some people are getting away with it, and that's why people get this idea, is that there are people who seem to just lead a blessed life, some sort of lucky life, and they see, I want that too. And they're not willing to put down anything that requires some sweat and some effort.
Yeah, I've noticed that trend too. And it can also get really frustrating if your hard work doesn't seem to be getting rewarded right away.
Yes.
You know, or even after a lot of effort, you can really start to get discouraged. And when you see other people having it so good, well, it can get to you at times, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, you see it in athletes all the time. They say, look, I'm doing things honestly. I am running as fast as I can, say on track, and I am doing the best I can. And there's the guy next to me, and he's doing 200 times better than me, and I know he's taking steroids. Now, of course, they're going to logically say, why am I not shooting up? I know it's going to damage me. I know it's going to leave me sick, and I know it might even kill me, but why? I want the success this guy has. He's laughing at me. His success So cheating is not only encouraged, but it's definitely becoming part of the entire group. It almost seems like in the Olympics, you see these people and you know that they're shooting steroids. You know that they are cheating to get somewhere. They don't want to work. It used to be that an athlete without any pay, the Olympics doesn't pay very well, except for now they've got sponsorships and things, but it didn't pay. So you were doing this for the love of doing what you do. And now they're looking for other things like the money and the success.
Yeah. I'm sure there are a lot of religious people out there who are doing exactly the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, who are looking at their religion as, if not a get-rich-quick scheme, at least a way of getting something more or less for nothing. You can believe for free. And apparently that gets you an eternity in paradise.
Yes. Well, there's a minister that actually comes good for this. Have you ever heard of the gentleman named Crefo Dollar?
Not off the top of my head, no. Tell us about
it. It's an appropriate name. Crefo Dollar is an African-American pastor in the southern U.S. who is, you've heard of the book The Secret.
Yes.
It's where what you think becomes real. It manifests in reality. So if you think rich, you become rich. It's an Oprah Winfrey favorite. It's one of her favorite things. Drives me nuts. That's a whole other show right there. Crefo Dollar has the Christian version of it, that if you pray to God, you pray hard enough and you give him enough of your tithes and you give everything in your pocket and you go to your grandma and say, Grandma, I need everything out of your pocket. God will reward you 1,000-fold, because the Bible does say that if you put enough in. But of course, it also says that it is harder for the rich man to go to the kingdom of heaven than a camel to go through the eye of a needle. So, in other words, that it would be simpler to shove a camel physically through the eye of a needle than to get a rich man to go to heaven. Now, they seem to just gloss over that Jesus wanted you to be poor and in rags when you entered the kingdom of heaven. Now, Crefo Dollar, different story, but this is a new get-rich evangelism that they're doing now. They say, if you give your money to me, what you've got, I will turn it over to God and he will give you money. It's another get-rich investment scheme, and it's becoming extremely popular in the United States and in the United Kingdom.
I gotta tell you, I was never really raised religious. It never really came up that much. But one of the main reasons why I'm not religious is because I tried wishing for stuff. I even tried praying for stuff. Never got it. God never came through with my spaceship or my laser gun or my lightsaber or any of that stuff. I'm not living in a nice, technologically futuristic world like something out of the Jetsons or Star Wars. Didn't happen.
No.
So apparently wishing doesn't make it happen, doesn't make it so. I wish it were otherwise, but even that wish doesn't come true.
I'm actually truthfully thankful, and so were the bullies in your school. I think that having you wish a lightsaber to reality might have made the antics on the playground a little more bloody than they expected. I think you'd be redoing the cantina scene probably at one point or another.
Well, you know, let's look at it this way. If I'd actually gotten the spaceship, I would have taken my mother's advice and just walked away.
After probably going after the one who says, I don't like you and neither does my friend. I think they would have ended up losing an arm or so. As anyone who knows here, you're a big Star Wars fan.
I'm not nearly as violent as you think me, but not really.
At that age, something tells me.
I reserve my violence to verbal attacks these days.
But I think if you had gotten a lightsaber, things may have turned out slightly different.
Well, you know, I gotta tell you, I take it back. I did get a spaceship once or twice when I wished for it, but frankly, only at Christmas time.
And you couldn't squeeze into it.
Well, that's true. Yeah, that's true.
Not to exact size.
You know, but that's the thing is that Christmas has also been changing lately, and
yes,
the religious don't like it.
No, and they usurped it anyway. Up until the 1800s, nobody celebrated Christmas. In the Bible, people's birthdays, including Jesus, it was forbidden. And what it was that in the UK and in other countries, they celebrated Yule. They celebrated a time of renewal after December 22nd, when the days were getting shorter, now they're getting longer. And so it was a marker for pagan society to be able to say, now things are going to get better, let's party.
It's true. And when the pagans were being displaced by the religious, by the Christians, they started taking over a lot of the pagan holidays and making them their own. Yes. And the Yuletide, the solstice time celebrations are among those that the Christians tried to usurp. And so they decided to move the birth of their Savior, which no one's actually sure precisely when it is. They tried to move it to this solstice time to take over that holiday. I mean, if you look it up, you can find that Jesus' birthday may have been, what was it, January 6th or 7th possibly, or maybe even in the middle of summer. And yes. No one is for sure. And never mind that we don't know for certain that Jesus even existed in the first place. No. But assuming that he did, his birthday was sure as hell not December 25th.
Not in Israel. That it would have been very cold. The one thing that they do have is that the shepherds were sleeping out in the fields with their sheep. In the winter in Israel, doing that would have left them with hypothermia and potentially death. So not going to happen. So historically, there was no easy proof. The fact is that there's no way, even with a fluke, you know, warm spell, still not going to happen. Their winter, they are on the same level parallel with a lot of other countries that get very cold during December. Not going to happen.
So when the religious start saying that there's a war on Christmas, clearly there isn't. And if there is, they waged it first. And so
they're in the majority. There's no way that anyone can claim persecution when you are 80% of the population. You can't do it. When you have 8 out of 10 people are Christian and they are celebrating their holiday, there's no way that the 20% of us who just don't want to be bombarded constantly with Merry Christmas or having the commercialism that goes along with it shoved down their throat, that they can say they're persecuted. They may be under attack, but they're definitely not persecuted.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. I mean, I actually really like Christmas. I mean, yes, I call it Giftmas, the capitalist holiday, but I like giving and getting gifts. I like the tree. I like most of the carols. I like the decorations. I like the Christmas specials. I mean, I enjoy this time of year. It's fun. It's entertaining. You get a chance to connect with friends and family. And sure, you know that the commercialism can get a little crass at times, but it can also be really fun to see someone's eyes light up when you give them that perfect, well-thought-out gift. There's something actually quite satisfying about all of that. If there's a war on Christmas, it's sure as hell not coming from atheists. There may be a war on the dominance of Christmas. I mean, I was raised by an Italian Catholic father and a Jewish mother. Believe me, I got Christmas and Hanukkah. So, you know, this is not just Christmas time. It is a holiday season. I mean, even if we count the sort of like bullshit made-up holidays like Kwanzaa, Happy Holidays makes more sense because it's not just Christmas time. Christians don't own this time.
No.
And that's what there's a war on, is Christmas dominance.
It's another one of the things that they stole and made their own. Same with Easter. Easter, most of the traditions of Easter were, again, during the spring, during the time when they were going through their crops, they were renewal, the eggs, there definitely was no Easter bunny in the Bible. Painting of eggs.
And, you know, even little kids are realizing this makes no sense. Rabbits don't lay eggs.
No. And would be probably dead rabbits laying around if you tried to force the issue, too, I would think. But yeah, the Christmas, all of the trappings, as I said, 1800s, the Santa Claus was first a commercial item. The very first Santa Claus was in a Coca-Cola ad. Very first one. People think it was around forever. It was not around forever. St. Nicholas used to be something that actually severely punished kids. It was sort of like its own little demonic Jesus. He would come back and judge the good and the bad little girls and boys, and the parents too. And the fact that the tree was actually a druidic symbol. Mistletoe, druidic, very druidic. Mistletoe was considered a magical elixir, very powerful, a way to bring back life to the dead, how to make people love you, hence the kissing under the mistletoe. Yule logs, almost everything that they hold as their own is not their own at all, and is very, very recent. It's only because people have let it become part of society that we think it's just there.
Yeah, when you think about it, how absurd is it to go out and chop down a tree and put it into your house? That's just one of the weirdest. I mean, we accept it because it's tradition at this point. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love the tree. I like decorating it. I like putting the lights on it. I like seeing the lights on it. I like coming downstairs. Well, I live in an apartment now, but back when I was living with my parents, you know, I'd like coming downstairs and discovering presents underneath the darn thing. I don't hate Christmas at all. Having the tree is a little weird if you think about it objectively. If you think of it from a context of someone who does not have our cultural indoctrination, it's one of the strangest things you could ever do is to put a tree in your house.
Yeah, and the way they used to have it, definitely a big fire hazard. They used to have this dry piece of former tree, and they would actually attach candles to each of the branches. Can you not see that there's a definite risk of destruction of property and people? More deaths happen around the holidays, even now, with plugging in 200 light bulb connections to the same power bar, old frayed connections, and people die every holiday from this. It's a weird idea. I haven't really celebrated Christmas myself since a kid. As I've said before, turning to atheism was because I lost the tooth fairy as a young child. My parents admitted in front of me unknowingly, they didn't think about it, that the tooth fairy doesn't exist. And immediately then, no Santa, no nothing. I didn't even accept more than, one or two gifts after that. And pretty much the holiday has been spoiled for me ever since. I don't consider myself a Scrooge. To each their own holiday. I think it's very nice, pretty lights outside and stuff like that, but things like the tree and the mistletoe and things like that, they are definitely weird.
Oh yeah, it's but even the strangeness, it has a certain kind of comforting aspect to it at times. There just is something to it. It's very like a Charlie Brown Christmas, or it's very it has that sort of feeling of almost childlike innocence and joy and familiarity. There's definitely something to it. And even I, as someone who has really tiny veins and poor circulation and freezes in the cold and absolutely hates it, even I think that Christmas is a great time. So war on Christmas? No. War on Christians being jerkwads about Christmas? Hell yeah.
Sure. Well, there is an article, I cannot recall which town it is, but there's a town in the United States right now that they have what they call a tree of life. It's a pagan or a non-Christian representation of just sort of a celebration of life, and it was posted by the atheists in a town center where they have a menorah for the Hanukkah, and they have a Kwanzaa setting, and they have the manger. Now, the city hall, being Christian, refused it. So if there's a war on anything, I think it's a war on what they don't believe fits into their little idea of what Christmas should be.
Yeah, and of course the state should not be recognizing a religious holiday like Christmas. Think about it. Why is December 25th a day off? Why should it be if not for religious reasons? Technically speaking, we should all go to work that day. Now, again, I like Christmas, and I would like that to be a day off for everybody too. The government should not be sanctioning it. If your job wants to make a secular decision to say no one come in on December 25th, great. The government should not declare it a national holiday. Really should not. If they want to have some sort of holiday display up, the separation of church and state says that we should not have a religious display on government property. Just should not have it, simply because we have to be non-denominational. We have to be egalitarian. We have to either represent absolutely everybody equally or represent nobody so nobody's treated unfairly. Yep. And I know a lot of religious people would like to say, well, that just means that we're giving the atheists the advantage. Well, no, you're bloody not. Because if we had the advantage, if you know, self-declared, rabid, specific atheists were getting their way, they would put something up on the government that says there's no God, get the fuck over it.
Yeah.
But we're not doing that either. Yeah. Basically, the government has to take no position. It's not our fault that looks a lot like atheism to you.
Yep, that's the whole idea of being a secular government. And the other choice, people, for those of you who are Christians or Muslims who are listening to this, is what happens if another religion gets in that you don't like? And they tell you what to do. For example, for all of you Christians, especially in North America, who are so frightened of the evil Muslims, well, if you allow religion to be ensconced into your constitution, into the things you do, and a Muslim gets in and decides to do things their way, who's going to be the atheist at the bottom of the pile? you're going to basically be the token atheist. Where we are, you will be. And then you're going to be kind of looking for our help at that point. So I think it's got to be all or nothing. And again, I think that town squares having a manger scene, I think, is not only tacky, but I think it also is an insult to others who do not believe the way you do.
Absolutely, absolutely. And nobody is saying that you cannot celebrate Christmas. Nobody is saying you can't do it in your own home. Nobody is saying you can't sing Christmas carols out in public, just not on government property.
Right.
Nobody is saying that you can't put up decorations. Nobody is saying any of this stuff. Nobody is saying Christmas has to end.
No.
Nobody. They're just saying the government cannot take a position on it. They're just saying that we all should be more inclusive of people who are not Christian. That's all we're saying. And if to you that means there's a war on Christmas, well, how is that not extraordinarily selfish?
Yeah. And insincere.
Oh, absolutely. The thing. Some of them, I'm sure, like Bill O'Reilly, is probably completely sincere about this stuff. But there are other people who are definitely doing this as more of an agenda-serving of thing, rather than that they actually feel persecuted.
And remember, Christians, that only 40 years ago that you were saying that the Jewish menorah shouldn't be anywhere because it's an attack on Christianity. Before us, it was the Jew. The Jew was the big bugaboo. During the time of the McCarthy era, with the communism and everything, that you had atheists pretty much under your thumb. Nobody was ever going to be coming out as someone who didn't believe in God. But if you didn't believe in their kind of God, and you believed in Yahweh, and you believed in the menorah was the tradition at the time, and you wanted it posted up, there's no way in hell you would have let them. So again, things have progressed. You allowed some equality there. Just think a little further along.
Well, that is one of the problems that I've found with religion, is that they constantly need an enemy. They always need somebody who is either going to take everything from them or is doing things the way they don't want, who is living their lives in ways they think are wrong and are trying to take something from them by doing it. They always have to have an enemy, someone they're against, because they don't have any other way to unify people.
Absolutely.
They don't have a message of peace and togetherness that actually works on people. The only way they know to ensure loyalty is to say there's someone out to get you and you need us to keep you safe. And how people don't see through this boggles my mind. But apparently their fear is overriding their intellect.
There definitely is an awful lot of fear in North America and United Kingdom. That fear definitely prevails. It is a great motivator. I mean, I've said before, in the 1950s, the McCarthy era, communism was the big bugaboo. They didn't have to worry about other religions. Christianity was like 90, 95% of the people claimed Christianity around the Western world. And what they did was they had to have a common foe. They said it was the great red menace, the commie. And now it's us. Now that there is no more communism, they of course have to go down the list. It's not a vogue to be against the African Americans with their Kwanzaa or the Jews with their menorah, but it is definitely perfectly fine for the majority of the religious to say that someone who doesn't believe in anything is an open target.
And the thing is, we don't necessarily have to be enemies. I mean, we're opposed to each other. We have opposing viewpoints, but we could just discuss it intellectually, like, you know, people who actually think. I hate to say like adults, because I still consider myself something of a kid at heart. We could have these discussions without it having to be war every time.
Oh, sure.
That only works if both sides are willing to play along. Though there are moderates on the religious side, a very large number of the religious people want it to be war, because we have to be the enemy. Because if they don't have an enemy, they don't have a way to unify people, because apparently their message is not enough without an enemy.
Especially now with the Tea Party in the United States, and I would think with the UKIP and the BNP in the United Kingdom, with our hardline right-wing conservatives in Canada, that now there is definitely a resurgence of people wanting to find someone to hate. There was a time when it was sort of a little more peace, love, and understanding. It was only the people like the Jerry Falwells and the Oral Roberts that really got on top of things. Now they have an actual political group in each country with their own agenda. And if it's not Muslims, it's us. And around this time of year, it's very easy. There's one billboard up in, I can't remember which U.S. town, but you might remember, but it had basically, it said, remember during this season that it's all a myth, and there was a large atheist billboard. Immediately on that point, the Catholic League put up two gigantic billboards on the other side saying, no, it's not, basically.
Yeah, that I'm pretty sure that's New York City.
New York or Detroit. Yeah, it was on the East Coast.
And yeah, it said, you know it's a myth. This season, celebrate reason, I believe is what it said. And there actually has been a fair amount of criticism, even coming from atheism, from various atheist groups, about this billboard. But honestly, I like the message, you know? It is a myth. I mean, we've already shown how the Jesus story, the Jesus myth, does not occur the way people today think that it actually did. It wasn't like that. And that people put up a billboard saying, no, it's all real. It's not a myth. Celebrate Jesus, because that's what they put up.
Yep.
You know, I mean, okay, fine. We're both getting our messages out there, but it sure seems awfully spiteful. And it does. The Catholic League is acting as if this is an attack on specifically them, for one thing. You know, the whole idea is to get people who are not religious, but who are in the closet, to come out. That's what the guy who put it up said.
Remember the reason this time of year. Don't just go along with the pack.
Yeah, you know, and if you are an atheist, be proud. Stand up and say, yeah, I don't believe in this either, and it's okay to not believe in it either. Yeah. You know, and it is okay. How is somebody else not having faith going to hurt you? Who is actually going to attack you just because they don't believe in God and you do? There is no logical pathway from the one to the other. No. You're not a victim, people. Stop playing that card.
Yeah.
Get off the cross. It's already occupied.
Yeah. There are some people who could definitely play the victim card when it comes to religion. Not you. You're not it. There are definitely, in Bosnia, there was definitely a religious card. In Somalia, Ethiopia. But no, you don't get to play it. Plain and simple, you don't have the right to use that card. Especially 80% of the population. More likely you're the oppressor than the oppressed.
In any event, Glenn, this has definitely been an interesting talk today.
Yes.
And I hope we get a lot of people thinking, if not talking, about the issues.
Yes.
But I actually do have to go film an episode of Ask an Atheist. I'm not going to be on. I'm just going to be crewing. And I think we've just about reached our hour.
We have just actually almost down to the minute. And after editing,
so
who knows?
It has been great chatting with all of our listeners. Great chatting with you.
And do enjoy the holiday. I mean, even though you're not believing, for you atheists, that, you know, in Jesus or any of the other stuff, enjoy the trappings, have some turkey with some friends, use it as an excuse to get together with people. I would prefer you're nice to everybody 365 days a year, and that this day is coincidental, that you don't, like a lot of people, spend this time to be extra sugary sweet just because it's Christmas.
Yeah, oh, absolutely, absolutely.
Spread it around.
There are some people that it's okay to not be completely nice to. I'm thinking Hitler, George Bush, William Shatner. You can kick all their asses, but be nice to everybody else.
How you get Hitler and Shatner in the same sentence is beyond me, but we'll discuss that later.
They both end in "-er."
Yes. Okay, people. Well, again, this is Glenn Watson. You can find me on YouTube at http://www.youtube.com/user/allbabiesareatheists. Don't forget the S.
And this is Kate Farr, also known as Bionic Dance. You replace "all babies are atheists" with Bionic Dance in that URL. You can find my YouTube channel as well.
Links are going to be in the description, as well as you're going to want to mention Kinnear Baxter.
Oh, of course, yes, absolutely. Remember to read my webcomic, The Adventures of Kinnear Baxter. It's a sci-fi romp along the same lines as Star Wars, Star Trek, and Babylon 5. You may enjoy it.
And check again next week for another of their furthering podcasts with some meandering topics like we were this week. And so enjoy yourselves and have a wonderful week.
Have fun.